Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and happy Saturday to each and every one of you. The time is now 6:03 p.m. on the East Coast, 3:03 p.m. on the West Coast. Today is November the 4th, 2023, and you're tuned into the TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show on the TMGN, the Michael Gay Network. And thank you for chiming in. Oh, I got to open up the chat room. Let me do that. Today we have some great topics, and of course, you know, we're going to get into the political thing, and then we're also going to talk about the holiday season is here. Yes, the holidays are here. Last week we celebrated, well, some of us, not all of us, Halloween. Not everybody celebrates Halloween. Not everybody celebrates Thanksgiving. Not everybody celebrates Christmas, but it is the holiday season here in the United States. So we're going to talk about those things and a few other topics I have on board, I have in mind, and hopefully you guys will be interested in it. But without further ado, I'm going to open up the microphone to the lady of the house, my co-host, the one, the only, Miss Janet Pollock Hawkins.
Good afternoon. Hi, Janet. Michael. I'm good.
Good
How
afternoon,
are you?
Janet.
Good afternoon.
You know, now, see, you guys, I got to tell you something. Janet and I, we communicate week before the shows, day of the show, minutes before the show, you know, of what we're going to talk about. And it's really interesting, you know, our conversation and everything. And things do change because we always try to keep stuff up to date. We always try to keep things on point because there's always something changing minute by minute, right? You know, it's always something new that's going on in this world. And I have something I want to share later on in the show about this world, not about this country, but about this world, how united we really are, even though we're against each other, we have to depend on each other. Regardless if you live in the United States, regardless if you live in China, regardless if you live in Russia, every one of us is dependent on each other at some point. Correct me if I'm wrong, but just look at the products that you buy, okay? The things that you get during this holiday season to make your Christmas a Christmas. And everything that you look at and everything that you buy, look at where it's made. And I really challenge everybody to really take the time of look at the label on everything you buy and keep track of where it comes from. I challenge everyone to do that. Tell me what you see. But we have all these issues. It's something that came across my mind, and I kind of wonder if people really, 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 really think about it. When you watch the news of all this, you know, there's a problem, you know, China and old North Korea and everything. Well, China's in support of North Korea. China supports North Korea. We buy China products. China has missiles, this, that, and the other. Do you think that China is probably taking the money that you spend and, you know, on their product? They're not making it for free, y'all. And the money that they make, they might be helping out North Korea. It's just a thought. But we'll get into that later. But first, I want to do this, is that first, I want to let Janet share what her day has been. You know, how was your day today? How was your week? And then we're going to get into the first holiday that we just had. I guess they call it a holiday, which was Halloween. This is past Tuesday, right? Did you have any trick-or-treaters come to your house, Janet?
No, not at all.
Were you...
My house is broadcast off the road. I don't have trick-or-treaters coming down my driveway to knock on my door.
Wow.
I stopped buying candy because it's too much for my grandchildren to try and eat up because trick-or-treaters don't come. I thought I'll buy candy.
Wow.
Not for them.
Mm-hmm. You know what I found? You know what? Yes. And guess what? I had one trick-or-treater. And
so
just so happened,
he
lived right
Hold on.
He lived right across the street because he knows us. Imagine that. I had one trick-or-treater. I was sitting on the porch. Myself, porch light was on. You know, you guys, you know that it's always been a rule of where if you're giving out candy on Halloween, have your porch light on. If you're not, shut it off, right? Within recent years, that's always been. And in fact, I think it's been for some time because not everybody celebrates Halloween. So what happened was my porch light was on. And had candy, and the neighbor across the street walked across the street, got some candy, went up the street. They told me that a neighbor had their porch light on and they thought they were giving out candy. They went and rang the doorbell and they said, oh, we don't celebrate that. Come on now. You should
know
the rules.
Some people just have their lights on, Michael. Some people just have their lights on at night.
Come on, come on. Janet, look, come on now. You know it's Halloween. I don't care if you celebrate it or not, but you know that there is a rule.
So those who normally have lights on have to have them on.
There's a non-written rule that on October 31st, non-written rule, but you should know it by now, that on Halloween night, if you don't want to be disturbed, turn off your porch light up until maybe 9, 10 p.m. to let kids know you're not giving out candy. Now, I've known this for, I mean, hell, I'm 61 years old. I've known that ever since I was a kid. Porch light out, you don't walk on that porch unless they're playing spooky music. Now, if they're playing some spooky music or sound effects, they're trying to make it, you know, theatrical. They're trying to make it where, yeah, we got the lights out and everything, you know. Then you're invited or something. Be scared. But come on. It's Halloween is nowhere near what it used to be. Now you have it where you have churches that are doing what they call, or not just churches, but other others that are doing things that are called fall festivals, right? Autumn,
yeah.
Whatever you want to call it, autumn festival, fall festival, whatever you want to call it, and they're doing it at different venues. They're doing it at churches, they're doing it at community centers and everything, but it's kind of sad that it's gotten to this point because there's a fear involved of trick-or-treating. And a lot of folks say, well, it's Hallows Day.
Can I say something?
The devil, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
My children enjoyed when they had the sugar donuts, bobbing for apples, candy corn, popcorn balls, candy bags of candy, play music, have kids over there, had a party. They liked it till they got to be teenagers, but when they were younger, they liked having a fall festival party. Yeah, I didn't let my kids out because there was too many crazy people out there. And even though you tell your children not to bother or eat any of the stuff that they gather, they're going to eat it anyway.
Are you done?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Okay, so I agree with that. And that's, that's a thing of where, a parent, of course, will tell their child, don't grab everything that is put in your bag. See, when I was growing up, we used to take pillowcases, because we figured we're going to fill that damn thing up. And a lot of times we had some pretty full pillowcases. And we come back home and we pour out our candies, and we used to sit up there and we used to negotiate. I'll trade this, I'll trade that, I'll trade that, because some candies you didn't like, some candies you did. That was back in the old days. But now, okay, and again, you have to look at the things that were people were giving out, things like apples, as you just said, certain edibles, like, which all of it is, but like, things that were not wrapped up. It wasn't name brand. People would make cookies, give out cookies for Halloween. And you couldn't trust that. And you didn't. You couldn't trust it, and you didn't trust it. Correct?
It depends on who you were getting it from.
Well,
it
if you knew
who
him,
you
right? I know where you're going with that, Janet. I know where you're going with that, right? If you knew the neighbor next door back then, they were a good person. You know, you trusted them, right? Depending on who you got it from. If it wasn't somebody on your block, you didn't trust it. Somebody on your street, you didn't trust it. Somebody you didn't know their name, you didn't trust it. I get where you're going with that. And that's true back in the day. But nowadays, it's totally different. Again, I'm going to go back to the fact that trick-or-treating does not exist. You got to go to a venue. You got to, you got to go to the church. You got to go to the community center, and everything. And then what I also found out interesting is that Halloween was always about, you know, the scary things, you know, the horror and all that type of crap. But in the position that I'm in, I see that what sells a lot are superhero costumes. Princesses and prince and, you know, Teenage Mutant Turtles type stuff. You know who's buying all the horror type stuff, the blood and the blood packages and everything? Teenagers. The teenagers are into that same thing of the horror era. You ever notice that? Parents are buying costumes.
Or adults. Because they go to parties.
Adults, right. The adults, exactly. You're on point there. The adults want the horror aspect of Halloween more so than the fun side of it, meaning the superhero type thing. The only costume I saw for an adult, the only two I saw for an adult, was Whiskey Man, where you dress up like a bottle of whiskey, or the Banana Man. Now, I did see some horror ones, but you know what? Those did not sell as well. Mutant Turtles, princesses, of the movie-type characters among kids were the hottest sellers, or toy characters, I should say, were the hottest sellers. And I don't know why, folks, I have to share this with you. Why would you take a piece of a costume off of another costume? Because costumes come in pieces. I never realized this until recently. Costumes are not like it used to be where it's just one costume where you just put it on and boom. But there are some where they have gloves, footies, necklaces, all kinds of crap that they have now. And it clearly states this costume has three pieces, three-piece costume, four-piece costume. I even saw some that were eight-piece costumes. Eight pieces to this costume? Eight. And a customer comes in and tears off one piece. Seriously, why do you do that? Why do people do that? It's not that they're going to buy it. They're just, to be honest, it's in
the thrill of stealing. The thrill of stealing and getting away with it.
Well, stealing,
and it could have been a kid taking it off.
Because true, or a parent, because I've seen that happen too. But see, here's the things that people don't understand. When you do that, it brings up the cost on items in the long run. It really does. Keep in mind that every time that something is destroyed in a store, they got to pass on the loss to you, the consumer. Then people just do it. So with Halloween gone now, and everything now has gone down to 50% the day after, and on every holiday, everything goes down to 50% in the majority of new stores. I mean, not just costumes. Some even went down to 75%, and will keep going down. Okay? Candy even went down. Oh, my God. When I found out how much money candy makes, I was like, really? That's how much money we spend on candy? Well, that's great for the company. And I'm not, and don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. If we're going to spend that type of money on candy, so be it. So be it. But when you're paying 100% for it, and then the day after that particular holiday, 50%, it goes down. That should tell you something about the manufacturers and stores, where they're not losing a dime. Right? So Halloween is gone. And by the way, I'm pretty sure you can go into many stores and still find Halloween costumes and all kinds of Halloween type things that are probably at 20% right now. And you can save it for next year. But that's what gets me, because I know a lot of folks who come the day after certain holidays and buy up all the 50%, 75% off, and save it for the next year. But some folks want the newest, the most recent stuff, and they'll wait till next year to do so and buy it at regular cost. But what sense does that make? You can get this stuff for 50, 75% off, put it away in your attic, in your storage bin, whatever you want to do, and bring it out next year. I'm just wondering,
right?
Because I'm looking at where there are, I mean, just the store that I'm at alone, and I look at where there's trailers, literally trailers of product. You know those type of trailers you see on shipping. You know, I'm sorry, not trailers like trucks, containers loaded with product. Loaded with product. And then you look at even blow-ups. When I worked for Home Depot, some of those blow-ups were like in the hundreds of dollars, like a $100 blow-up.
So,
and then once the holiday is done, the day passes, guess what? You can get it for $30. You can. And I'm looking at the customer who walks in and says, man, I paid $129 for that damn blow up. You mean to tell me you sell them for $30 now? Yep. You could have bought it the day after and saved it till next year.
Wow.
See, America used to be a country, from what I've read, of producers. We used to produce product. Now we are the biggest consumers on the planet Earth. We're the biggest consumers. Why? I don't know. Maybe you can give me an answer.
When manufacturing companies and everything went overseas, we became a consumer instead of a seller. You know, we have a president now who's been trying to bring companies back, which is a good thing for people, because a lot of manufacturing jobs did pay quite well. You know, you got some of the unions are, they're making more money. One of the auto companies They said they can get up to $50 an hour. That's good compared to $18. To go from 18 to 50?
Oh, that's a big, that's a huge raise. I agree with that. Okay. But let's go ahead and get in our, to our political topic here. And then I'm going to go back to that whole Halloween and holiday season topic because, you know, I find it interesting.
Yeah, well, because Halloween over. We talked about it last week.
Yeah, but we have Thanksgiving coming. We have Christmas coming. We have New Year's coming.
But that's
coming,
not Halloween.
You know. Excuse me?
So you're going to talk about Thanksgiving?
No, I'm gonna talk about, no, here's the thing. Holiday season. We're in the holiday season now. After Halloween, we are officially into the new holiday season for 2023. Okay, but I'll go back to that. Let's get into the political part of the show, and then I'll bounce back to that later on. But let's look at what's been happening here with politics, and you know we have to talk about our favorite guy. Okay.
Oh, my, who is that?
Come on now, Janet. You've been waiting on this part of the show.
No.
You've been waiting on this part of the show.
You the one say me, I'm politics. I'm not. Well, I didn't say I was waiting on this part
you
of the show.
You follow politics. You follow it. But let's go ahead and do it. Let's get it done. So here we go, you guys. And by the way, the chat room is open. If you have any questions or comments, you don't want to be on the air talking on live on the phone line, that's fine. Just go to just go ahead and share it in our chat room at www.blogtalkradio.com/TMTS. And it doesn't take but a second to really join and post your questions or comments. I will read them on the air. But, wow.
Or just sit back and listen and get ready to take the ride.
Okay, so if we look at another episode. Okay, hold on. Okay, I just got a text, so I had to take a look at that. Has nothing to do with the show. But okay, you guys, here we go with the Trump saga. The Trump family, it's not looking good for them because you had Donald Trump Jr. testify and you had Eric. Eric, if you're listening, man, you really screwed up the other day. So I have to play this for you because this does not look good for your dad or your sister who needs to testify soon. So, Janet, can I play the theme music right now? Here we go. That's the theme song for the Trump family after Eric testified. Eric, you lied on the oath. You lied on the oath, man. You really gonna make it hard. I'm pretty sure Donald Trump has already said, Eric, what the hell were you thinking? Well, Jenna, what do you think he was thinking when he sat up there and said he had nothing to do with anything with the financial, situation of his father's business, but he signed off on a bunch of them?
He should have pled the fifth, just like they normally do. Then you don't have to worry about it. I mean, because you lie, it's getting you in trouble. You're not supposed to perjure yourself. So it's better to say nothing at all.
But pleading the fifth, seeing that the judge is looking at the fact that he knew it, that can go against him because a judge can do that, be like, well, so you're saying you don't want to answer the question, which is pleading the fifth, and saying, I have nothing to say about it. So,
but the thing is, they are already
Can I finish? By pleading the fifth, you're refusing to answer the question, right? So what happens there is that a judge can use that against you because a judge can look at it as a sense of where, well, you know you did this. You know. And you're pleading the fifth where I refuse to say yes or no. But they can use that against you because that kind of like makes you look guilty. You know, you just don't want to say is the bottom line. Correct? You know. You know you did this. A judge can look at it in that sense, which I read an article on that and from other judges. An attorney said, yeah, for him to plead the fifth will probably not be the best way to go when the evidence is right there. The documentation is right there. And for you to say, I don't recall, I don't remember, for them to say that, well, I'm not sure about what the accountants did. And by the way, that's what so far the Trump brothers are saying, well, we had no idea. We believed in what the accountants were saying and what the accountants were doing. But no, your fingerprints are all over the ship. You can't do that. What, you just sign off on something and don't read it? Let me ask any of you, do you just sign anything and don't read it? I know many folks do, but do you do that on a regular basis? Can I come to you and say, hey, look, I got this idea for a business, and, hey, you're going to make – just sign your name here. No need to read it. And that's exactly what they're trying to say. They're trying to blame the accountants.
What?
Go ahead, Jenny. I said they're trying to blame the accountants. Hello?
Oh, I didn't say anything.
Oh, I said, oh, I thought you were about to chime in. But
no,
I just asked
no,
a question.
You told me to wait.
No, I thought you were about to say something, and I said, go ahead, but I'll say it again. Can you actually, or can they actually say they had no clue about any of this? They just signed off on stuff without reading it? Are we supposed to believe that?
Well, everybody knows that they were... And the dad put them in charge of the business while he was president of the United States. So
okay. They
know because it's a small, it's a company. It's a family-owned company. Yes, you know what's going on. The bottom line is nothing goes past without them knowing about it or signing for it.
Okay.
I'm quite sure they
sure.
do when they inflate it and deflate it.
With that being said, I mean, okay, so they already knew that. And I heard this conversation on another show about where how can they take them to court over this. That is still criminal, though. Am I right? That's still criminal. That's still against the law. To
correct.
Adjust your numbers. It's just like when I do my taxes, I do my own taxes every year. Am I allowed to lie to the federal government? Am I allowed to lie to the IRS and say this, that, and the other, and then all of a sudden say, oh, you know what? I got the money now. I'll send it out. No, the IRS wants their money due to the deadline, right?
That's right. Are you allowed to perjure yourself?
Or you make an arrangement to pay them, right? But you can't file a false return. Am I correct?
You're not supposed to.
Okay. So when it comes to me getting what they were doing, am I allowed to falsely inflate what my property is worth in order to get money from you? Am I allowed to do that?
No, that's
and
stealing.
Then, and,
that's
and,
stealing.
But then they're saying, well, he paid it all back. But you lied in order to inflate. I mean, you inflated. You lied in order to get,
You paid the amount back that they claimed because they deflated. So no, you pay, might have paid something back, but you didn't pay what you were supposed to pay.
Okay.
It's just like
right now,
they're trying to give tax breaks to the wealthy, you know, trying to take advantage of the fact that there's a war.
Okay. I'm sorry. They deflated what the value was. They deflated what the value was, and then all of a sudden it changed it up. All right. So with that being said, next week, Donald Trump himself, on Monday, I believe, has to testify. What do you see, and we're going to move on to another topic, but what do you see is going to happen with Donald Trump on the stand? According to some of the reports, you know, the brothers, you know, of course, they did horrible, you know, but they were, you know, pretty cool with the judges, you know, according to some individuals who were in the courtroom, that, you know, it wasn't as heated as some networks would say. But do you think it's going to be really heated next week when Donald Trump himself comes? And then what's going to be interesting is that Ivanka been forced, she's been forced to testify, and they've been trying to fight that. His daughter that he loves to be touchy-touchy with, what do you think?
I think Donald Trump is going to plead the fifth, and Ivanka, they already got her on tape saying she believed Barr over her father, so she's going to have no choice but to tell the truth. If she doesn't, she'll be perjuring herself. Hey. Are you still there?
I'm sorry. Okay. Hold on just a second. I got you the call. Hold on just a second. I'll be right back. Hold on.
Well, anyway, I'm looking forward to Ivanka's testimony, testifying. She tried to get out of it, you know, but they weren't buying it. So she's going to have to go and get on the witness stand and answer questions. It's going to be scary. I pray nothing comes out for Jared with the $3.1 billion.
Okay, I'm sorry. I had to get off that call and fix that up.
Well, I think that's going to be the bombshell for them when Ivanka speaks. You know, I really think that's going to be really interesting when she, because, you know, they've been trying to avoid this. They've been fighting it for her to speak. I think that's going to be the bombshell because this is his daughter. This is the individual.
No, everything already on tape. So she's got to tell the truth. They got her on tape, you know. So just like with Don Jr., they might not have had Eric as much, but Don Jr., they had him on tape on saying things. So you be careful when you say things because it'll come back on you to haunt you later
on. Eric denied having anything to do with any of the personal business.
He's a bricklayer or some old mess. Yeah, right.
Right. But let me finish. Eric denied a lot of stuff, and then the prosecution pulled up emails and all kinds of stuff where it was plainly clear he knew what was going on, and his hands are on it. It's there through the emails. Eric denied a bunch of stuff. And the prosecution was very crafty at this. They were very smart. They were like, they asked him the questions. He denied it. And then all of a sudden they're like, okay, well, let's take a look at here. Looky here.
That's what I just said about Ivanka. She already said it's been on tape about, she said she trusts what Barr was saying over her dad. So she's saying that the election was not stolen.
Okay, so here's the thing I'm saying, though, Janet. Her father is due up on the witness stand on Monday. He can plead the fifth all day long. I don't think that's going to work. Again, when you plead the fifth in a trial, regardless, I mean, so in any trial, when you plead the fifth, you know what pleading the fifth means? I plead the fifth to not incriminate myself. Because what does that say? That says, if I say something, I might say something that can what? Incriminate myself. So at that point, you know, even your defense attorneys know, and they plead the fifth. If you need be. But if you plead the fifth, the judge has to look at that plea and determine whether or not is that saying you're guilty or not guilty. In most cases, it's like, no, so you don't want to tell the truth on your behalf. So I have to look at the charges that have been put towards you and believe that you're not trying to actually explain, for lack of a better term, that you should not be under these charges. So you, like, just let it flow. But the judge is going to go by the charges. Understand my point? Is that confusing for some folks? It might be. But I get it. It's like, if you can't speak up for yourself and you plead the fifth, you don't want to speak on your behalf. The charges are there. And you're being questioned. You're on the stand. Look at how many individuals who don't even take the stand. Why is it enough? Because they could probably incriminate themselves even more. Donald Trump is going to take the stand. His daughter is going to have to take the stand. The Trump family is really in a pickle, as they say, with this whole thing. Would you agree with me?
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm.
Now, let's get to the main question. Will Donald Trump ever go to jail? I doubt it. I truly doubt it. Only way he will go to jail is if he continues to go against the gag order. But even after all this stuff, in my opinion, and I wish anyone who's on the board and everything chime in, hit the number one if you have a question or comment, I don't think Donald Trump will do any jail time. I think a lot of this is going to come back to the fact that he will not be able to do business as a businessman in New York, probably other areas, but more so in New York, because I think that that's the main thing. Him not being able to run for president, how can you have an individual who's convicted of a crime be your president of the United States? I mean, explain that, you know what I mean? How's that possible? Of the 14th Amendment. Go ahead.
Because of the 14th Amendment, there's a few states that are going to the state Supreme Court to make sure to bring it before the Supreme Court, state Supreme Court, to keep Donald Trump from being on the ballot to run for president, because
correct.
They state that the things that he did is against what the 14th Amendment is saying. So I think that he's going to be found guilty. Because it only takes,
okay.
it only takes one. Someone told me a long time ago, you can pin as much as you want to pin on a person, it only takes one thing to send that person away. You can be not guilty on all the others, but just that one. So he's guilty already for New York State for the way he was conducting his business. They're just trying to figure out what the fine is going to be. That's why they're having the hearing.
Okay, so let's take a look at that. I'm glad you brought that up. According to The Hill, and this is from a post that I have here that Janet shared with me, efforts to keep former President Trump off the ballot under the 14th Amendment reached the Minnesota Supreme Court on Thursday, with several justices during oral arguments appearing weary that they should be the ones to determine Trump's eligibility. The case, brought by a left-leaning nonprofit, is one of multiple across the country seeking to prevent Trump from returning to the presidency under the clause, which provides that anyone who took an oath to support the Constitution but then, quote, engaged in insurrection or rebellion cannot hold office. Thursday arguments, okay, concern several legal issues the nonprofit must prevail on so their case can move ahead. Does the clause apply to presidents? Can the provision be enforced without legislation from Congress? And this is what question marks. Is the issue a political question outside of the country's authority? Five Minnesota Supreme Court justices, four of whom were appointed by Democrats, are weighing the case after two others on the court recused. Several justices Thursday expressed concerns about the various threshold issues. Quote, I think your argument about the political question doctrine is, I think that's a very serious problem for the other side on this case, unquote, Justice Barry Anderson told Trump's attorney. So you got folks who don't want Donald Trump on, I mean, just remove him completely for the presidency, correct? Just remove him.
Well, no, can't be on the ballot to run in that state.
No, that's what I'm saying. Just remove him from the ballot. Can't be on the ballot, right? Because according to him, he's violated the 14th Amendment. Am I correct?
Correct. Because of the 14th Amendment, yes.
But he hasn't been found guilty as of yet. See, that's the trick in the whole thing. He's being tried on these things. He's been indicted on them. But he hasn't been found guilty as of yet. Now, what do you think about that? It's in the process. A lot of folks think he is guilty. But these cases have not.
They said participation. Did it say found guilty in the 14th Amendment? Did it say participate? Or did they say just and they had to be found guilty?
Well, the thing is that there's no evidence, to be honest, that he participated until the court cases are
evidence. It is evidence. What do you mean there's no evidence?
What I'm saying,
we're going to march to the Capitol. We're going to fight like hell.
listen, Janet, has he been convicted of being the one that
did
was,
the 14th
you know,
commandment say convicted or they said participate?
But has he been? No, you got to be. Okay. Do you want me to go back and read it again?
Did it say participate or did it say convicted?
You asked. But the point is, what I'm asking you is this, okay? And I want you to hold tight for a minute and let me finish my question. Donald Trump has not been convicted of anything yet. He's been indicted. And that's how come he's going through all these court cases. He's been indicted, but he has not been convicted, okay, of any crime as of yet. So to say that, you know, he had something to do with, you know, January 6th and everything, he hasn't been convicted of a crime as of yet. He's been accused of things. But how does the 14th Amendment play a role in it if he has not been convicted yet? Now, I have to look at that, okay? And with that being said, I mean, we have to be realistic here.
Apparently, you didn't read the 14th Amendment because it didn't say conviction.
Okay, I'm going to go back. I'm going to go back. Give me a minute. I'm going to go back and read what it says. The case brought by left, okay, in fact, I'm going to go back here. Efforts to keep former President Trump off the ballot under the 14th Amendment reached the Minnesota Supreme Court on Thursday, with several justices during oral arguments appearing weary that they should be the ones to determine Trump's eligibility. Weary. Eligibility. Keywords. The case brought by a left-leaning nonprofit is one of the multiple across the country seeking to prevent Trump from returning to the presidency under the clause, which provides that anyone who took an oath to support the Constitution, meaning the President of the United States, let me finish, Nana, before you intervene. Let me finish reading it. But then, quote, engaged in insurrection or rebellion cannot hold office.
Engaged. It didn't say guilty.
No. But where's the... But that's why they're going to show that he was engaged in it.
Michael, they're going to court because of the documents. They're going to court for a lot of different things. As a matter of fact, 91. And like I said, it only takes one thing. But that 14th Amendment said engaged in the insurrection. Anybody who takes the oath, he took an oath.
Okay, so I'm going to open up the microphone here, and I think I know who it is, and I think they have a point of view on this. 770-317. You know I got to bring in the law. I do believe this is Officer Crenshaw. What's up, Officer Crenshaw? How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you guys? Mike, Janet, how are you guys?
Good.
I'm sorry.
Great. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Janet is correct because it's engaging, which is participating in, and they are going to be able to prove, because it also shows to aid or give comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And he just gave a speech saying that the people that were charged with insurrection were not prisoners, they were hostages. So if you were being incarcerated for something and someone said you're a hostage, that's going to make you feel a little bit better as far as somebody trying to get you out. That's give comfort.
Can I ask a question real quick? Can I ask a question, though? Has Donald Trump been
charged. Okay, okay. Well, he's been charged. But has there been an actual conviction at this point for everything he has done? Has there been a definite, you are guilty of this?
14th Amendment.
Hold on. Because you just said, Officer Crenshaw, you just said, well, yeah, you said that, if they can prove. Thing is, it's in the process. Nothing has been confirmed yet. Because if it's been confirmed, Donald Trump will be jumping up and down. So my question is this. With Janet's question, or what Janet said, and I said with the 14th Amendment, you got to find him guilty first. He has not been found guilty
on the 14th Amendment.
No. The way that it goes is it's not directly against Trump. What they're doing is they're suing the Secretary of State of these different states to keep Trump off the ballot based on the 14th Amendment.
Correct.
That's what they're doing.
But has it been confirmed yet?
All they have to do is prove that he engaged or participated or incited or gave aid or comfort to anyone who did participate.
And he did all.
Correct. No,
and
but have they proved it yet?
Well,
have they made that
the
confirmation that
he has to be proven?
You got to go by the judicial system. Has it been proven?
Michael, you go by the 14th Amendment.
Well, what's going to happen is the judge hearing the case is going to have to put on multiple hats, because it's just like when you taste jam, you think it's jelly, or vice versa. So it all depends on when that judge puts on those multiple hats in order to determine whether or not the people he gave aid and comfort to felt aid and comfort. If they didn't feel aid and comfort, then it's going to be ruled no. But if they did, it's going to be ruled yes. So the judge has to put on multiple hats and take over the feelings and emotions of the people that have already been charged. So he'll probably end up calling some of them in and questioning them to find out, how do they feel about Trump saying this or Trump saying that or Trump doing this or doing that, or the Republican senators going down to the jail and giving them comfort and different things. Do they feel that that was giving aid or comfort? Was it making them feel better? If they say no, because I'm still locked up, you know. But by Trump saying, I will give them pardon, that's comfort. But the judge has to determine that.
Exactly.
The judge has to put on and determine that.
Exactly. And that's what was my question. But what was overlooked is the fact that Donald Trump has not been found guilty at this point of anything. He's been accused. He's been, you know, indicted. Donald Trump has not been found guilty yet. These indictments and these trials are ongoing. So when it comes to the 14th Amendment, as Janet said, he violated that. It has not been clarified. And no judge has said, yes, he has yet. It has to go down to where a judge, like you just said, has to make that determination. Correct?
Right. Correct.
Okay, that's the only thing I was saying to Janet. And she said, no, he's guilty. No, until a judge says so, then you could say he violated the 14th Amendment.
Right.
The process
is still going on
with all these states. It's still going
basically,
on.
Basically, Basically, they're suing the Secretary of State to keep him off the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
If those lawsuits are successful, then the DOJ might take that information and evidence and use it along with the insurrection charge and everything else, because we know that's not going to go forward for a while, but it just builds up more evidence.
Correct. Yeah, he's not been found guilty of anything as of yet. You know, the only thing that Donald Trump has been found guilty of is violating the gag order. Because now he done paid $5,000, then $10,000. That's the only thing he's been found guilty of as of yet. But as you said, I agree with you, Janet. You know, when it comes to the 14th Amendment of what he's done,
I did not say guilty. Don't put words in my mouth. I said engaged.
Okay. Look, you can say engaged, all right, and that's fine. But still, again, saying engaged, that's what you're saying in your point of view. But the thing is, he's not guilty of it, and they cannot, you know, use that against him until a judge makes a determination if that's a fact. You're saying he is engaged. A judge will have to say he was engaged and guilty. That's the way the law works, and you know that as well as I do. So we have to look at it in that sense. The man has all these things against him, and, you know, I mean, he's still out there doing what he does. Still doing what he does. I never said that you said he was guilty, but you said he was engaged. You can't say that as that's your opinion. And that's your view. But he has not been found guilty of committing a crime. You have to prove he committed a crime, and that's why we are where we are right now. Okay? That's why we're where we are right now with this whole situation that's going on. Okay, so I think it's time to take a little break. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to regroup and pull up a couple of things here. Oh, let me pull up a couple of songs here. Take a music break quickly. Okay. You know, I got a text from a friend of mine, been on the show. Y'all know him. Darn, I'm sorry. I'm trying to pull up his name on the board. His music should be right here.
Yeah.
But if I can't pull him up, I'll pull up somebody else. Let's see if I can do that. Okay. Okay, here we go. I'm going to go ahead and search. Take a quick break. Let's all take a breather for a moment, okay? We do deserve that from time to time. So let me see if I can bring up this brother here. In fact, chatted with him. He's been a guest on the show before. And he's going to be in the ATL next month for a toy drive. And I'm so glad to hear that. He's going to be here next month. This brother has, again, been a guest on the show, and will be the first time I'm going to go to the event. He's going to be here in the College Park area, I think. I want to share the information for you guys. So let's go ahead and take a quick music break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the TMGS, the Michael Gay Show, on the TMZ and the Michael Gay Show. We'll be right back.
DJ, can you play that record louder? I'm just trying to get turned up with my shorty on the dance floor.
Oh, yeah.
Excuse me, DJ, can you play that record louder? I'm just trying to get turned up with my shorty on the dance floor.
standing here alone, looking so far, got me wondering who you came with. Maybe we can be friends, or we can have a fling, or you can be my main chick. Hold up, wait a minute, let me slow down. Girl, you just got my mind blown. I like knowing, I'm just trying to get the jump on you, so maybe we can be alone. Not a fool to think that I'm the only one who noticed you, cause right now you got all eyes on me. Yeah, so do you mind if I take you on the floor, so I can get one dance with ya before you leave, girl? DJ, can you play that record louder? I'm just trying to get turned up with my shorty on the dance floor. DJ, yeah. Excuse me, DJ, can you play that record louder? I'm just trying to get turned up with my shorty on the dance floor. Girl, we ain't gotta talk, we ain't gotta drink, all you gotta do is move that body. We gon' tear the floor up and get the club lit like it's a private party. It's unbelievable the way your body is calling for me, yeah. Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. Not a fool to think that I'm the only one who noticed you, cause right now you got all eyes on me. So do you mind if I take you on the floor, so I can get one dance with ya before you leave, baby, yeah. Excuse me, DJ, can you play that record louder? I'm just trying to get turned up with my shorty on the dance floor. Excuse me, DJ, can you play that record louder? I'm just trying to get turned up with my shorty on the dance floor. I'm just trying to make a move, doing what I gotta do, just to get with you, baby. I'm just trying to make a move, make it do what it do, while I put you in the mood, baby. I'm just trying to make a move, doing what I gotta do, trying to get with you, baby. I'm just trying to make a move, doing what I gotta do, put my needle in the groove, baby. Excuse me, DJ, can you play that record loud? I'm just trying to get turned up with my shorty on the dance floor. Can you play that record loud? I'm just trying to get turned up with my shorty on the dance floor. Yeah. Excuse me, DJ, can you play that record loud? I'm just trying to get turned up with my shorty on the dance floor. Mr. DJ. Excuse me, DJ, can you play that record loud? I'm just trying to get turned up with my shorty on the dance floor.
Welcome back to TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. I'm your host, Michael Gay, and we've been into a little heated conversation, you know, regarding Donald Trump and all this stuff in the political field. But, you know, I try to get through that early in the show, not really linger on it, but it is interesting because now a lot of things about the Trump family is coming to light. I don't know how many of you guys who follow what's going on in the court cases. But before I get into that, I want to tell you about that song right there. Again, that's Mr. Ishmael Sings. Great song, great artist. Out of Dallas, Texas. And if you live in Atlanta, I want to tell you guys something. He sent me this information. The 2023 Joe Douglas Foundation Toy Drive and Holiday Showcase is going to be going on Sunday, December the 3rd at 6 p.m. Admission is free with new unwrapped toys, or we will accept your donation. That's right, Sunday, December the 3rd, 6 p.m. Eastern. Admission is free. Our goal is to collect 500 toys. We're providing toys for those kids who otherwise wouldn't have a Christmas. For more information, make sure you call 501-512-1802. That's, again, 501-512-1802. Joe Douglas. Joe Douglas loved the kids, okay? Backstage Atlanta, and this information I'm getting here is at 2505 Gordy Road, College Park, Georgia, 29. And there's another number here too, but check it out. If you want more information, if you have contact with me on Facebook, Instagram, and everything, I'll share it. It's a 2023 Joe Douglas Foundation Toy Drive and Holiday Showcase. And my homie right here, oh my goodness, love to see him coming to the ATL. Ishmael Sings will be there performing live. Okay, you guys got the information? Good. Support. All right, so we're back on the air. And, you know, with all this that's going on, and I want to jump to something else real quick, though, but I hope I got everybody's mic open. Officer Crenshaw, is your mic open? I think Crenshaw's still here. I think Janet got mad at me. But Crenshaw, are you still here? Okay. So all this going on, the bottom line is that where all the indictments, all the criminal stuff is going there, there has not been anything at this point for Donald Trump to be arrested for. Charges are one thing, and Officer Crenshaw can confirm that for me because he's a former APD officer here in Atlanta. You could be charged for anything, but as they say, you are innocent until proven guilty. And we all know that Donald Trump has done a lot of crazy stuff. We all already know he's been indicted for a lot of alleged crimes. And this is an ongoing process because it's not the everyday person. Keep that in mind. It's not you or me being, you know, told we believe you committed a crime and where by law you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. But unfortunately in the streets, no, you're guilty until you can prove you're innocent. We see that every day. But in this, it's a different story. Be real about it, you guys. Come on. I don't walk through life with blinders. I pay attention to what I see and hear. And what I'm seeing now is really amazing to me. Again, it's going to be interesting to see how this works out, how this whole thing works out with the Trump family. If Donald Trump says that the Biden family is a crime family, well, let's look at the things that the Trump family did years ago. We already know that, what they did in the casinos and, you know, and all kinds of stuff. We already know that. I'm just curious, again, after the brothers testified and were caught in lies, dad has to testify and may play the, plead the fifth. And then the daughter has to testify. It's going to be interesting, is what I'm saying, of the outcome. And how the judges look at it. You plead the fifth, you pretty much, in my opinion, you're saying that, you know what, I don't want to get myself in trouble because I know I'm in trouble. Think about that. I'm going to plead the fifth. You got a lawyer right there, right? You're in the courtroom. You got a lawyer right there telling you what to say or not to say. If your lawyer tells you plead the fifth on every question, technically you don't want to say nothing because it might become fact and truth in a judge's mind. Think about it. Think about yourself, not about Donald Trump. Think about yourself. You have the right to plead the fifth. You don't want to incriminate yourself. But a judge could be like, well, so you don't want to answer the questions? Some judges be like, well, then, damn it, I'll look at you being guilty. Mm-hmm. That happens in courtrooms in America. You don't want to answer? Well, then you might be guilty. Am I right or wrong? You know, some judges might look at it that way. Officer Crenshaw, I see you here on the board. I apologize. I had muted everybody while I played the music. I wanted to open up your mic. You know, you could have went ahead and hit that. But what's your thoughts on that?
Well, you're right. You know, you're innocent until proven guilty. But because a lot of us don't have fat-ass wallets, you know, we're pretty much guilty until we prove ourselves innocent. And that was even when I was locking people up. Because it's the inconvenience of being arrested, taken down, being booked, being processed, sitting in the jail, waiting to make bond. You know, it was the process of all of that that was the inconvenience, you know, and the frustration, you know, that sets in. And then you feel like, well, damn, I didn't do anything, even though the law says innocent until proven guilty. But you already feel guilty because of what was taken from you. Your freedom was taken from you. You were arrested. You were incarcerated, even if it was for 72 hours before you made bond.
That's, you know, 2 days.
A lot of cases.
That's,
yeah, a lot of cases.
That's three days of your life.
Right, because you're entitled to make your bond, but you might not hear a judge up to 48 to 72 hours when a judge can hear your case. But you've sat in there because you don't have the money to get out. What a lot of people don't know is when you make bond, no matter what your charge is, you're basically, like, say, if you make bond on a city charge, you're automatically pleading your case over to state case, which means disorderly conduct is now going to be heard in state court instead of city court. Where in some cases, disorderly conduct would end up being dismissed from time served if you spent the night in jail, depending on how serious it was. Domestic.
No, wait a minute. Now, hold on. You just said, now, so that the listeners can have an understanding of what you just said, disorderly conduct could be city court, but if city court is not open, it can go to state court. Would that be unbeneficial to them since it went over to state court, or should it stay at city court?
It should have stayed at city court because it's a city ordinance, a misdemeanor charge. So,
but once it goes
a lot
to
of people
state court, it could be even bigger, right?
Right. You're looking at more time. If you ask for a jury trial, you're looking at more money for lawyer fees, for court fees. So a lot of people, just say you were drunk and disorderly, you know, and you got locked up. But you don't want to spend time in jail. So you ask to make bond. You make bond, whether it's a signature bond or whether you get a bonding company, and you get out. Well, now your case is bonded over to the next court to hear the probable cause. Now you have your probable cause have to be heard. You got to go through a trial calendar, which means money you got to pay for a lawyer to come every time or whatever, back and forth. To where in some cases, drunk and disorderly, you know, it was like the old Andy Griffin show. Ernest T. Bass got out all the time the next day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And you never saw his way.
And he was the only one in town that, you know what's so funny? He was the only one in town who had a wife that you never saw. Or at least
right.
I never did.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking Ernest T. Bass because this new Republican speaker.
It wasn't Ernest T. Bass. It was it wasn't Ernest T. Bass. Otis, right. It was
Otis.
Ernest always.
I just saw a picture of the new Republican speaker, and it made me think of a well-dressed Ernest T. Bass. That's what, you know, when he was in love with Mrs. Watts. So that's what made me say Ernest T. Bass.
I think she was married Lou or something Lou. It's one of those Lou's. But anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, you know, a lot of people would spend the night because they couldn't afford to make bond or wait. They would just spend the night. They go in front of a judge for the probable cause hearing the next morning. Because they spent the night and it was a minor infraction, case dismissed. They get to walk out the door.
Mm.
It's not going to show a conviction. It's just going to show an arrest. So you've been arrested 15 times for disorderly conduct, never convicted, because you spent the night in jail each time and the judge decided to let you go. If it was 15 times for disorderly conduct and you were chasing folks down the street with a machete, that would be different.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's crazy.
But that's just the way the court system works. They do that because the courts will get – it will be overflooded if they lock, you know, for jaywalking and different dumb shit like that. You know, it will be overflooded.
Right.
And the way they do it now is when you make charges on somebody.
Well, it's already overflooded. You already know that. You know in your experiences. And you've been retired for a while, but even during your years, the courts have been overflooded because we don't have a judicial system that's prepared, really, or wasn't prepared at all the stuff that was going on, even during your tenure as an officer, and thank you for your service. But the thing is that whereas time goes on, it's still not prepared for the overcrowding of overcrowding, but all the stuff that's going on in crime and in Atlanta and other judicial systems, let alone the jails, cannot handle all these inmates, correct?
Right. Well, the way they're doing it now is if you arrest someone, you know, if you're going to incarcerate someone, then you don't just do it on a paper report anymore and send them to jail and, you know, then you come to court and testify. You got to actually go in front of a judge now the way they do it in New York and swear your statement in on your probable cause. The judge can tell you then you don't have probable cause for the charge that you're trying to charge him with, you know, or you do have probable cause. I'm going to sign the warrant, take him on down to state court. The judge can tell you if you don't have probable cause and you want to arrest this person, you need to release them on a copy of charges. So you write their tickets and you take them home. Although most officers not going to take them home, they're going to write the tickets and say, hey, you need to call somebody to come pick you up.
That's what I was thinking because they ain't going to drive. Right. Go ahead. That sounds
right,
crazy.
But
you could
raise enough hell at that point with a supervisor and say, look, how the hell am I going to get home? You brought me here. You impounded my car. I need a ride home. I'm already at a safe place. So can I spend the night here in your precinct with my copies? Or can you take me home? I don't have any family. I don't have anybody I can call. You can raise enough hell the right way to get what you want out of it. It's just like in corporate world, you know, if you're not getting satisfaction at Lowe's or at Walmart or at Target, you can always ask to speak to a store manager and then tell them, well, I'm going to take this up to corporate, you know, and talk to somebody in corporate about this. So it's the same thing. You know,
wow,
the only difference is you might get a little bit of attitude. That's the only difference. You know, the officer might say,
yeah,
no, we can't.
But what you just said, but see, a lot of folks will be afraid to take it up a notch, right?
Well, they're not afraid. They're not afraid. They're just ready to get the hell up out of there before the officers find something to keep
on
them there longer. Right. You know, I'm raising hell, so now you're going to charge me with this charge and keep me here overnight anyway. That's what goes through our mind as a human being. You're just ready to get the hell up out of there. You'll complain when you get out in the taxi, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's the
let me ask you a question
law
now.
Enforcement has.
Right. But let me ask you a question on some things I'm sure you've probably seen, and it's kind of like off the track of where we talk about politics, which I like to get off that. But I'm sure you've seen many videos of where individuals who, you know, impact some officers and some bad officers, right?
Right.
Not all officers, for all you guys that are listening, not all officers are bad. In fact, this gentleman here has been a co-host on the show. You don't hear from him much because he's always busy doing a lot of things. So I truly appreciate him. He's been a friend of mine for many years. But when you hear or when you see the videos of officers that are not doing the right thing, and then here you see where the individual is still charged with disorderly conduct or what's another term, resisting arrest. When the video clearly shows they should have never been, you know, even gone through it. You know, why would they be even charged with that at one point? Do you think that that's where the officer is trying to leverage against the individual, you know, at some point of saying, well, they, you know, when I told them to not do this, but the video clearly shows the officer was in the wrong in the beginning, you know, why are folks still being charged or those charges are even being documented? Is that from the officer's point of view? Or should the chief of police automatically just dismiss that after they see a video or whatever the case may be? You understand my point?
Well, in most cases, the chief will go down the line, the chain of command, and probably have those charges dismissed or removed. But in most cases, it's because of covering your ass. The officer's trying to cover his ass from being sued later on down the road and having the department being sued and then the department looking at him and terminating him. You know, it's the same way that Donald Trump won't accept responsibility for nothing he's done. It's always somebody else's fault.
Right.
You know? Oh, the reason why, you know, I grabbed the woman's coochie is because that's the way, you know, when you're famous, you can do that. You know, it's been done for hundreds
of
years.
Other people did it. Other folks did it, so I figured it was okay. Right.
Right. Well, at some point, you got to accept that was my arm moving over there to grab it. You know, it was my actions. But you have people covering their ass because what's taught to you, what's preached to you, what's instilled in you is that the department sets the guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
You work for the department. So basically they try to brainwash you into taking out your morals and your ethics of common sense away from you as far as if you're going to do this job, then you need to know how not only to cover your ass, because we'll damn sure throw you under the bus, but you need to know how to cover the city's ass so we don't have to pay X amount of dollars for something that you did that was unauthorized, illegal, grown, not trained, but if it was something you was trained to do, you know, just like growing up, you know, you are, if you didn't do something wrong, you don't admit to it.
Mm-hmm.
But where most right. officers make the mistake is during the academy, it's the articulation of your words. You know, I got to the point to where if I was involved in a shooting or if I had to fight somebody, it wasn't me saying, well, I was in fear of my life, because that's what they want you to say. Oh, I shot him because I was in fear of my life. No.
Though he was unarmed, even though he was unarmed.
Whether he was armed, whatever the case might be, I would put in my reports what was in my mind at the time. You know,
okay.
chasing him through a dark wood line, got there, he spun around, you know, he had his hand at his waistband. I couldn't see what it was. As I got closer, it looked like a gun. I pulled out my gun, ordered him to stop. He pulled it out. I ordered him to stop further. Turned out to be a cell phone he threw down. I holstered my gun and we continued to chase. It wasn't no, I shot him because he pulled the cell phone out of his pocket or out of his waistband or whatever. Because you got to be damn sure. That's something you have to live with. But it's so much fear running through officers that they don't want to die. I don't give a shit about dying. I'm not ready to die, but I don't give a shit about it. That's how my mindset was. That's God calling me. It ain't the criminal I'm chasing. It ain't whatever, because I can walk out my front door and get killed by a stray bullet. That's God calling
me. You could get in your car and just drive down the street and be in an accident, right? Ain't got to always be a gun. Yeah.
Right. That was my way of thinking. So before I pulled the trigger, I had to be certain. You had to be shooting at me. You know, because I don't want you to pull your gun out of your waistband and then you throw it at me left-handed and you right-handed, so it come across like a softball and I done shot you, and you throw it at my feet. How the hell do I explain that? I'm not going to pick it up and sit it over there by you. I got to sleep at night.
Let me ask
you
a question.
You have a lot of officers that think that way, but you got a lot of officers that they go into a fear mode and go, oh, shit, how do I explain this? Well, you explain it by telling the truth.
Let me ask you a question. People, how many times have you had to use in your 20-plus years, how many times can you say, just off the top of your head, that you've had to actually use, not pull, just use your service revolver in your
actually
years?
Actually fire it at somebody, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Out of 27 years, I might have fired my gun, my weapon, 5 times at someone that was shooting at me. I've had to pull it numerous
27
times
years.
to get my point across to someone that I'm not going to take an ass whooping for them, because you don't bring fish to a gunfight. Come on. But I've had 27 and a half years, I probably fired it shooting back at someone that was shooting at me or trying to stop a robbery 5 times.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Now, that's a testimony of the difference of a well knowledgeable officer, an officer who knows when to shoot and when not to shoot. That's interesting. I appreciate
and
you sharing
actually,
that.
The department that I work for, which was the city of Atlanta, the training that they do now is actually a shoot, don't shoot scenario situation training, to where you're, I don't know what the kids call this shit now, to where it's like you're in a live, you got goggles on, you're in like in a live situation going through. What do they call it? Virtual something or another. But anyway, they actually do training like that now to determine your reactions on different scenarios. They send you, you're in a room, it's a big screen, you got goggles on, you got a gun in your hand, and they have different scenarios coming out on you. Kid running out from a playground, you know, woman running from through the kitchen running from her husband, a husband coming at you with a knife, and you got to use either your service weapon, your taser, your pepper gas, or your Aspaton. And you have to make the right choice, because if you fail training, you'll be back in 90 days to go through training. And if you fail training again, your ass is pulled off the street until you can pass the training.
Right. You know, I was
because
fortunate.
They just don't want you to make a scary judgment because you got fear running through you. You're supposed to have fear running through you. But if you walk into that virtual training cocky as hell with no fear of what's going to happen, you're just going to squeeze off some round, you don't need to be on the street. And you got to know when to do it. Somebody running away from you, why are you shooting them? You chase
them. Right.
You know, if they turn back to shoot at you, whether it be with a gun, a taser, you know, you use the appropriate tool that you have on your tool belt. You know?
Correct.
If you see them throw the gun down, now you know they don't have a gun. At least that gun they don't have. They might have a second gun. Now you holster your mm-hmm. gun and you chase them with your taser. If they crawl on
you know what
the
I
fence,
found interesting. But I also say I like what you said about that. But you know what I found interesting is that where, you know, when it comes to chasing an individual, like you just said, you know, you see the direction that they're going into. Why is it necessary if they're running away? You know, you look at it where when a person is breaking into a person's home, in some states, the law is that you do not have the right to shoot at a person that are fleeing from your residence, right? If they're
right.
not on your property at that point, you can't do it. Just like stores, security of stores, at some point when they go out of the business, you cannot apprehend them.
Right. Well, that's nationwide now. If they're leaving and not posing a threat to you, you can't. But if they're leaving, not posing a threat to you, but have the potential to pose a threat to someone else in the area that they're fleeing to, you can, as long as you can explain that. Oh, they were running, and they were running up into a school.
Okay, right.
Full of kids. And I didn't want it to be a hostage situation. You have to explain that. But what happens is those officers, their mind goes into a panic mode, and I was in fear of my life. Well, hell, he was running from you. Just say why you did what you did.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm glad that you called in because we did switch up on the topic this evening, but I'm glad that we're talking about this here because as the holiday season is here, it's not approaching anymore. We are less than 50 days away from Christmas. You know, we just went through Halloween. We still have, believe it or not, Thanksgiving. You know, you look at all these holidays that just are crushed among each other. You know, yes, I said crushed. You know, October, November, December, and then New Year's. It's January, the first of the year, which is going to be 2024. But
right.
Looking at these situations that come up in law enforcement, crimes, thefts, this, that, and the other, folks that are having mental issues during the holidays and everything, I'm glad that we're talking about that. But go ahead. You were about to say.
Well, not even – you know, with law enforcement, because right now the world's environment, especially after Israel and Hamas, you know,
mm-hmm.
the anti-Semitic gestures and things that are going on versus Jews, more people are getting guns. And they got to know
cool.
when they can use them and when they can't. you know, although they're not trained like law enforcement, you know, you still have a heart and a conscience. And you just can't shoot somebody because they said the wrong thing to you.
Correct.
You know, now,
and
if they say, oh, you're Jewish, we're going to run up on you and we're going to kill you.
But I'm sorry, I was going to say, a lot of people are more mouth than action.
Right, but if it's one of you, five of them, and they're running up on you talking about, we're going to kill you, you're a Jew, da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, you're still a human being.
Correct.
So I understand the fear flowing through you at that time, but you still have to be able to justify why you pulled out your gun and shot someone based on what they said they were going to do. You know, what's that kid's name that went to the thing with the AR-15 and he shot a couple of people, but I think he killed one? Rittenhouse is his name?
It was Rittenhouse. Yeah, it was Rittenhouse.
He shouldn't have been there to begin with. But I understand,
you know,
he was getting his ass handed to him in the middle of the street, and they were trying to take his rifle from him. You know, and what the government needs to start doing is looking at all the laws.
Hold on, Crenshaw, that is debatable in that whole scenario. He had a gun,
right?
And obviously, Gabe must have saw the gun. He didn't have a pistol. He had a assault weapon, okay?
Right.
And their options to disarm him, I can't say that they were going to take his life. We can't say that because that never happened. We have to look at the fact that they were in fear of their lives of him having that weapon. You know, it's just like if you look at the individuals on 9/11, these guys had box cutters and everything. Now, they attacked individuals on the airplanes with box cutters. Now, at that point, you're looking at a person that's trying to do bodily harm to you. But with a person with an assault weapon to try to, you know, we don't know. But maybe they were trying to disarm him and take it from him and not take his life. Just disarm him so he would not be able to fire off a round. But unfortunately, he was able to do so, and a few folks, a couple of folks died.
And I agree with you because he shouldn't have been there to begin with.
Right, and that is the whole thing. I look at where he should not have been found not guilty. He should have been found guilty of involuntary manslaughter. Based on the fact he should not have been there. You have to look at, or I think that the courts got it wrong because the fact that, as you said, he should not have been there at all.
Right. Sometimes,
especially as a
child,
you
have to remove yourself from certain situations. You know, the best way not to be hit is not to be there.
Correct.
You know?
And that's the only problem I have with the court system of where the outcome of that case, the life of those individuals are gone forever. And for this person to walk free and not being accountable for the fact of the loss of life when it came from your weapon, it's not right.
Right. I mean,
when you go back to what you said, he should not have been there in the begin with. We already know the story, the fact that his family brought him there and put him in that situation. They put this kid in that situation. Everybody should be accountable. And unfortunately, in my mind, in my opinion, that is a wrong message to put out that a child can go to a rally or whatever. The parents are involved, and he walks free. And the parents walk free. It's not right. People's lives be gone when they did not have the exact type of firearm or firepower to defend themselves, or no firearm, period.
I had a store owner that
that's why
his business
was with the break.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
His business was getting broken into. I had a store owner whose business was getting broken into two or three times a day. 87-year-old man.
Mm-hmm.
He decided he would stay in the store one night, and he confronted one of the burglars. Well, the burglar told him, I'm going to whoop your ass, and I'm going to take what I want out of here. He pulled out the gun. The burglar ran. He shot him. We had to charge him.
Mm-hmm.
But you're looking at a 17, 18-year-old kid who shouldn't have never been where he was at to begin with, and nothing happens to him.
Mm. Correct. And that's where I have a, I have an issue with some of the debates over some of the murders of kids, period, that are doing crime. And then it's like, well, he was unarmed, you know, and this, that, and the other. Why did you have to shoot him? Well, based on the law now, and correct me if I'm wrong, that's true enough. If someone's breaking in your home, and it varies from state to state, I must say, for you guys that are listening, it varies from state to state, and not just state to state, but also city to city, county to county, okay? Georgia, here in Georgia, in Kennesaw, Georgia, if you're a homeowner, it's the law for you to own a gun. Am I right or wrong, Officer Crenshaw? That has
you're
been
right.
a law here since the 1980s, correct?
Right.
Yeah, I read that article back when it was first posted.
Right. But whether you
so
discharge or use that firearm and how you discharge it and use it is a whole different scenario.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a gun as a homeowner. But
correct.
Like you said, the law changed. If somebody enters your property and then see that you have a gun and they turn and run and you shoot them in the back, you should be charged. If they're
now,
shot in the chest or in the front, then you can explain they were coming at you.
But I was told that if they have exited your property, you don't have the right to shoot them. As long as they're on inside of your property, as long as they're inside of your dwelling, you have the right because that's an immediate threat because they're inside your dwelling. But once they are exiting, once they get outside of your front door, you don't have the right to shoot them. You know, and I think that's
even inside your property, if you shoot them in the wrong part of their body, you can be held accountable.
Correct.
If you shoot them in the ass or in the back, explain that. Explain it.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing a spinning jump kick trying to kick the gun out my hand, and I shot him in the ass cheek. That's the only way you can explain that. You know? Other than that, you can't explain it. He was making an attempt to leave. You have to afford them the attempt to leave.
But in the heat of the conflict or the heat of the of the situation, most folks are going to fire their weapon because they're afraid. They don't know if there's another individual, right? You know, and
right.
I think that that's where we have an issue or we have a problem of understanding because see, every day we see stuff on television, on the news about shootings,
now,
this and the other. But the law
see
is
what
different.
You just said?
Mm-hmm.
See what you just said? You just explained why you did it. I shot him not knowing if it was more than one.
True.
And didn't want another one to attack me.
Correct.
You tell what you did. It will justify
you.
The truth will set you free. You tell what you did. I confronted him. He was trying. He saw me. He turned to run. I heard more noise behind me. I fired my gun at him, not knowing if it was two or three or four more in there that I was going to have to fight with. Come to find out, it was just him.
After
you tell what you did. Most people don't tell what they did. The first thing come to mind is TV. I was in fear for my life. I thought he was going to kill me.
Mm-hmm.
You tell what
okay,
you did.
Okay, so we got 6 minutes more to speak, and I see another person on the board. She knows I know she's there, but she ain't hit the number one yet. I told her she needs to chime in every now and then, but she hasn't yet. I'll see if she hits the number one and at least say that she's here. But I believe that's her. But, no, I truly appreciate you chiming in, Austin Crenshaw, and I love these type of conversations because we need to have this more often and educating and let people understand. Laws are different. Different laws take place. Different laws are enforced in different states, in different counties, in different cities. And what we've been discussing is Officer Crenshaw, former officer of the Atlanta PD, over 27 years on the force. I love his brother. He definitely has been one of the best officers for the city of Atlanta. You guys probably recall, if you as old as I am, he was one of the officers on the TV show Cops, and the episodes that were shared there were some really interesting and amazing episodes and how he handled the situations he dealt with is just amazing. You know, it wasn't shoot first. It wasn't disrespect. He was very respectful to the individuals who were breaking the law. You go back and look at the shows. He's one of the officers, I have to say, that where I have to give him a lot of credit of how he handled certain situations to make sure they didn't get out of hand. And so I thank you, sir. And that's something that we want to discuss more often because the fact that we're seeing, you know, things we've seen and we're seeing still more issues with the communication between officers and the public. But we need more officers like Officer Crenshaw to be on our streets. Crenshaw, go ahead. You were about to speak.
No, I was just going to say I appreciate that, but we never know who we're dealing with, and you have to treat people accordingly. I mean, I think about the show Lethal Weapon when Danny Glover shot his son's friend and killed him, you know. Most officers that you get, they take themselves away from society, you know. But when I'm out there on the street working, just because I live in one side of the town, don't mean that my neighbor's kids or my neighbors aren't the people that I'm encountering. And then after I encounter them, if I treat them like shit, I got to live next door to them, you know. Who's going to call the fire department when I'm having a heart attack or my house is burning down? Not my neighbor, because I treated him like shit when he was DUI in the area that I worked in.
Correct.
So you treat people accordingly because you never know who you're dealing with.
He's going to cheer that your house is burning down. Right.
Right. My son got into all type of trouble when I was working the street. I didn't know if I was chasing him one night when he jumped out of a car or some shit, and I caught him and, you know, tuned him up, and damn, okay, it's my own child. You never know who you're dealing with out there. So you treat people accordingly the way you would want to be treated or want your family treated, and your neighbors are part of your family.
That's right. And you would think that the neighbors would be appreciative of a good officer. You know, again, I said there are some bad ones, and you know, the cities and the states need to know the difference and need to go ahead and weed out the bad ones. I truly say that once an officer is found guilty of a charge and everything, should not be able to serve and protect any community after that point. You know, they can't move on to another state and then pose as being a just officer. I think that there should be a database to follow officers who have broken the law, who have done things that is not appealing to, you know, to being an officer.
Well, and you're right. They should have that because they have it for officers involved. If you're involved in domestic violence, you're done. So if they can do that for an officer involved in domestic violence, they should be able to do it for officers that are involved in other inappropriate actions.
Correct. And that should be something that should be not just in a local, you know, type of thing, but you know, that's where it should go up to our, you know, to our representatives, to our Senate, to Congress and everything, of where there should be a database of that, of where we don't need those type of individuals being able to move on to another state, city, county, whatever, to practice the same things that they've been doing in other jurisdictions. We need to weed out.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If I left here and went to New York to become an officer, but I was found guilty of domestic violence here in Georgia, New York wouldn't hire me because of that, because I'm not allowed to carry a gun anymore.
Correct.
So if they can do that internationally, you know, from state to state for domestic violence on police, they should be able to do it for officers that are found guilty of bad shootings and everything else. You shouldn't be able to, you know, be fired from one department for a bad shooting and go to another one.
Exactly. I think that's something that most people would like to see happen, you know, even though, you know, we're being distracted with all this other stuff, this other political stuff. And to be honest, you know, the Trump thing, you know, it needs to take its course, but there's a lot of other things we need to look at that is so important to not just local communities, but in throughout the United States when it comes to law enforcement. You know, I commend and I have a lot of respect for first responders, but you know, it kind of bothers me, to be honest, Officer Crenshaw, is that when there are shootings like we've seen, the individual who shot up and killed those folks recently, and then he takes his life, which we'll never find out why he did what he did. I hear a lot of stuff where, you know, when there's a press conference, the first thing they say, you know, thanks to the first responders. I get that to a certain extent, but it kind of bothers me. Because the thing is that there are lives that are gone. You know what I'm saying? There are lives that are gone. And
you
we don't know
what you
this individual did it. We don't know why the individual did it. In my thought process is that let's tell me more about, you know, I mean, giving props to the individuals who came after the fact, but tell me more about the person. Tell me more about what you know about them. Now the news is like, well, we don't want to really speak on that person. No, give us the MO. Give us the understanding of why a person would do something like this. Be aware of a person who might have these type of traits. You know what I'm saying? You know, so we could be more aware, not to judge people, but to be looking at where, you know, be mindful of a person that might be quiet. On my job, they say, you know, and they have a class. They have a, I'm sorry, but they have a video. Be mindful of the person who becomes quiet. Be mindful of the person who, you know, various things that they might be going through something. You know, but we as a public
should have that same education through local news, through everything else, of a person who might be feeling a certain way or who might change their attitude and this and the other. You follow what I mean?
Right.
You know, I'm getting
yeah.
through my job.
What should bother you even more? What should bother you even more is that you got more people running out buying guns so that they can feel protected. And if you're just like the situation in Maine, if everybody in their bowling had a gun on their hip and he walked in and started shooting, how many of those people would have turned and engaged him? Maybe one, maybe two. Right. Because when you hear gunshots, you get the hell on. You start ducking and dodging and getting down. And you, if you got a gun, you're trying to protect your family.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's not coming
like
towards
you
and your child.
As you said, you're going to be ducking and dodging because you don't have the response to I mean, it's not like the freaking movies, okay? And people look at it like the movies of where you're Dirty Harry and this guy walks in to start shooting at the place and you got time to reach over and, you know, unholster your gun and start boom, boom, boom. You have a six shooter, but it shoots 12 times, okay?
Right.
Come on, man. Let's be realistic, you know.
Because you're not going, as an average citizen owning a gun, you're not going through the training every day on a daily basis. Your instinct is not to turn and run towards the fire. That's not your
it's
instinct.
It's to go away from it.
It's to go away from
it's
it and protect it. Your family.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So if everybody had a gun in there, it probably still wouldn't have did any good. We don't
True.
Know.
True. Because
you
don't know where it's coming from.
More people
from.
Running out
it's
buying guns now because of this, and you're putting more guns out on the street because of all this, because they're using it for promotion.
Well,
he's got an AR-17. He shot up everything. I'm going to go buy me one so I can protect myself.
Well,
the first thing you're going
to
do is hit the damn floor.
But here's the thing, too, sir, is that where when you hear gunfire, immediately you don't know where it comes from, and you cannot pinpoint who is the shooter. Your mind is like, what the hell is going on, first and foremost? Your mind is like, what? Yes, you may duck. But now, still, you're looking around. Your eyes are trying to focus on what's going on. Your mind is trying to focus on that. And I hope all the listeners can hear this. You know, even if you have a gun or not, first thing you're going to do is duck, as Officer Crenshaw just said, to get out of, you know, the line of fire. You've seen the videos where people duck and dodge and die underneath tables and chairs and everything. And, you know, it's just so crazy. I just saw the other day a movie with a guy tabled something to protect him from the bullets. That's wood. Bullets will go through the wood. But anyway, that was a movie, right? That's what they show you. That, you know, no, you ain't going to be hit, you know, behind a wooden chair. Bullets will go through anything, damn near. Some will go through steel. Okay, so back to what I'm saying is that where and what Officer Crenshaw is saying. You're right. If you're in an establishment and all of a sudden gunfire goes off, first response is for most folks is to drop and hide, get behind something to protect you, get out of the view of the shooter, correct? But if you have a gun, what's the best thing for you to do if you have a gun and once you sense where the fire is coming from? Is it to fire back at the individual or move away, you know, and get to the and look for the closest exit to protect yourself?
That's a judgment call on individuals. If they got family members there with them, they don't want to draw attention They don't want to draw attention from the shooter towards their family. So they're going to hover over and try to protect their family. If they're in there by themselves, they might shoot back at him. But then they also got to remember, shooting at him don't mean you're going to hit him. You might hit somebody behind him. So a lot of people don't want to take that chance. So they do what? They stay where they are. They protect themselves. If the shooting gets closer to them, now they're ready to shoot at the shooter to protect themselves. If they're in in a well-covered spot.
Correct.
You know? So that's a judgment call per individual. No one knows exactly what they're going to do in that situation until that situation happens.
Depending on the scenario, right?
Right. And most people with their family is going to protect their family. They're not going to want to draw attention to their family because, for one, they don't know if it's just one shooter or if it's multiple shooters.
Which I said,
they pull out their gun and start shooting at
him.
I said,
if it's maybe more than one shooter, right?
So if they start shooting at the one that they see, they shooting at the shooter that they see, and maybe he gets scared and run. But what about the shooters they don't see that might be in there? That they don't want to draw that attention to their family.
I would love to keep this conversation and this education open, Officer Crenshaw, if you don't mind, because I think it's very, important based on what we see and everything and your experience, if you don't mind, when we look at what we see and looking at how things are happening, not just here in the United States, but overseas and everything, but more so here, of where when you're caught up in a crossfire, how to react, and you being a former officer, I think that it's very important that you educate us and give us some ideals of how to deal with those situations if it happens. So I truly would appreciate that if you could share more knowledge on a regular basis. Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's every individual's mindset. You got average citizens, not law enforcement officers. They go to the range on a weekly basis or a monthly basis. So they're familiar with shooting and the sounds that guns make, And you got some that are former military, former law enforcement, and you got some that are just gun-ho. So it depends on that individual's mindset at the time. If he's not expecting it, if he's sitting in a restaurant eating, he might feel like he can't get to his gun quick enough. So he just goes up under the table and up under the bench, pulls it out, and watches, So it just depends on
each. And that's how come I said, sir, is that I would appreciate you educating folks who go to the gun range and hearing from a 27-year veteran of training them that they don't learn from the gun range, right? Of real life, real life experiences. So you and I are going to talk about that. I think that will be awesome. Because I have some friends who have guns, go to the gun range, but they're just shooting at targets. But for you to come on and share what you just shared this evening, I think will be awesome to educate folks about real-life situations that you've gone through and just imagine that and putting that into their process when they go to the gun range and everything. So is that okay with you? Because I think that's very important because this is the real world. And the real world. You've experienced it as an officer. And for you to share your knowledge and your experiences with the individuals who are buying guns now, just going to the gun range, is not the answer to everything. It's a start, but you can learn much more. You see what I'm saying? They can learn much more. And I would love for you to be the educator, you know, as far as when it comes to that. So that's okay with you. I'd love for you to share, you know, when possible, and get folks on and hear what you have to share. Because in this world now, it ain't no joke. It ain't no joke.
Right.
You guys have to understand, for all you listeners out there, you have to understand, this is no joke anymore. People, innocent people are dying, guilty, some are. The innocent people are dying based on the fact that individuals don't know how to handle a gun. They're not trained, and it's buying them up all of a sudden. You know, some do have a license, some don't. And the ones that don't are going to jail, you know, because they killed somebody that didn't really commit any crime. Think about that. It's becoming a ball of confusion. It really is.
Right.
So, this show, my co-host, my guest, as you're hearing, Officer Crenshaw, former officer, who will be honest and open, always has been since I've known him, about just the reality of his experience and what he knows. You know, you need to listen. Not every officer is bad. You got some out there that is trying to help you and educate you. This is one of them. I definitely will tell you that. Excuse me. So, leaving out of the show, next Saturday, we have a great show coming up. And also, I want to let you guys know that we have a new show coming on TMGN, the Michael Gay Network. It is an individual out of Birmingham, Alabama. His name is Darian Reynolds. You're going to like this show, to be honest. What he told me what he's going to do, I'm like, okay, cool. That sounds great. He's got a great crew, great staff that's going to be joining him starting on Sundays, okay? On the 19th, I think, we looked at, okay? Let me confirm that. So it's going to be Sundays, and it's going to start on the 19th of this month, and he's going to have a lot of great guests, a lot of great friends onto the topics. His show is going to be really interesting because he's a little younger than the rest of us, so he's going to bring us the younger crowd's point of views and their topics and conversations, okay? So keep that in mind. I will definitely keep you guys posted of the actual show times will be Sundays here on the TMGN, the Michael Gay Network. Also, Gwen Ross, she was able to broadcast one of her shows prior to the situation that I had, you know, with the fire. I think most of you guys know I had a fire at my home and had to relocate. It's still been a journey. Because I've lost damn near everything, but thank God I saved a few things, but I've lost a lot of, I did lose a lot of things that were family, you know, connected, but I'm good, you know, but one thing I said, TMGN will prevail, and we will still broadcast live. So we took a break, we're back. And so I'm glad for all the co-hosts. I'm happy that all the co-hosts that have returned. Hopefully the rest will return shortly. And having two new shows, as I say, Gwen Ross, she broadcasted one show before the fire, and hopefully she'll be coming back. Gwen Ross has a library of so many amazing I'm serious. Amazing hip-hop songs. I've known Gwen for many years, and years ago she joined me when I first started my first show years ago. I was live streaming back then. I think I shared this with you guys. I was doing live stream with Gwen. My very first guest was Stokely Williams, live streaming before there was anything known as all the live stream platforms that were popular just before the COVID thing. I was doing that shit. Honestly, I was doing it. And I was having to use like three different things. Stokely Williams was one of my guests. Jay King, legendary, extraordinary vocalist Carmen Bradford was a guest. You probably don't know who she is, but you can look her up. But her mother is a legendary artist. Her father, Bobby Bradford, a legendary musician. Back then, I was doing some shit that a lot of people weren't even thinking about. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I'm just saying that I'm thankful that I had that experience and was able to do that. And now, where I am now, man, I'm just like in awe. And with all the guests I've had over the years and continue to have, I'm thankful to have. So with that being said, TMGN, the Michael Gay Network, will continue. This show, TMGS, will continue. New shows, like I just announced, will be introduced and will broadcast. And you're going to enjoy it. Okay? So, Austin Crenshaw, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. You know I have to say that. But, you know, I have to let folks know. We're here, you know. I don't give up. I don't give in. I give to. And I'm just so thankful to be on this journey. And like I said, you know, all the shows that we've had, all the folks that I've had on the show, you being a co-host, you being on the show, is such an honor, you know, with all your history and your knowledge, and continue, you know, to have these conversations with you is a blessing. Okay.
Well, so I appreciate that, Mike. You know.
No, I appreciate you, bro. I truly do. I truly do appreciate you. All right, so I went a little bit into overtime, you guys, and you know, normally we just do 2 hours, but you know, I can do, you know, 2, 3, 2.5, whatever. But what we're going to do, we're going to go ahead and shut it down. Again, I want to thank Janet Davis, better yet, Janet Pollock Hawkins Davis, my right hand here. I don't know. I think she got mad at me, but she'll be back next week. I want to thank Oscar Crenshaw, you know, for chiming in and sharing, you know, some great, you know, stories and great things about, you know, what we just were talking about. And we're going to stay on point on those topics and going to make sure that we discuss us having these type of conversation on a regular basis, because it is important, because the community and the police, you know, force and officers need to learn how to communicate with each other. It is very important. And hopefully we can discuss these things and come up with some ideals and make it work. I'm fortunate to know some people that are in certain fields, like it's a Cupid of Cobb County. Officer Crenshaw, I know you know who she is. She's been on the show before. So we can share these conversations and get her back on. It would be interesting. I'll work on that. And with that being said, I want to thank all of you that are listening in worldwide. And if you ever want to chime in, you can do so. Go to www.blogtalkradio.com/TMGS. That's www.TMGS. Or you can call into the show at 516-531-9861. 516-531-9861. 61, or, and then you can join the chat room. Okay, so if you don't want to talk on the air live, that's fine with me. You can go ahead and post your comments or questions on the show. I'll read them on the air, like all of our shows. All right, now, last thing, Crenshaw, you have one last thing to say before we get out of here?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Just everybody
all right,
be safe.
Exactly. Everybody be safe. It is the holiday season, and we're going to always talk about the holiday season because, you know, it's going to go on for a long time, right? I mean, we have less than 3 days before Christmas, and I'm always curious about what people are doing. I see it every day, what people are spending, and we're going to share it with you. All right, God bless. Take care. See you next Saturday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific time, here on the TMGS. Good night, everybody.